Welcome to the National Bicycle Greenway's Mountain Mover podcast series. Here you will get up close and personal with people who are taking giant steps for the betterment of cyclists and for the planet itself.
We talked with some of the people who bicycle San Francisco, which as a world-class city is also fast becoming one of the planet's bike-friendliest. Home to 744,000 persons, we talked with some of those who make up the growing number of cyclists that regularly ride the Golden Gate City. It is our hope that, in conjunction with the San Francisco Biking Report Card, and soon the About San Francisco excerpt that will appear in Martin Krieg's upcoming book, How America Can Bike and Grow Rich, both of which you can find at bikeroute.com, that you will go away with a better feeling of what it's like to cycle the streets of San Francisco. From his office in San Francisco, California, we have the program director for the San Francisco Bike Coalition, Andy Thornley. A qualified and knowledgeable presence at the SFBC, as you will soon hear, his understanding of the bicycle streets of San Francisco also runs very deep.
All right, so how are you doing today, Andy?
I'm doing great, Martin.
All right. Well, Andy, I'm going to ask you a whole bunch of questions about what it's like to ride a bicycle in San Francisco. And essentially, I'm just going to get into it right now. I'll start hitting you with the kind of stuff I'm going to need so I can prepare our listeners for what kind of bike rider you are. What kind of cyclist are you? Are you a recreation guy, transportation? Where are you at on that realm?
You know, it's funny. That's a great question, just because by putting a term on it, you know, you have to stop and think, what do I do? Am I going somewhere? Am I commuting? Am I out on a joyride? And, you know, strictly speaking, I'm a commuter cyclist. If you go to the bike shops and they say, oh, yeah, you know, we sell a lot of bikes for commuters, and they look at my bike and it's a commuter bike because it's got a basket in the front and a bucket on the back and upright handlebars. But, you know, and utility bicycling, sometimes people say, oh, yeah, that's utility bicycling. I say, you know, that's kind of dead. I'm still kind of casting about for a term. I think I'm really just kind of a joyrider. Okay. You know, I'm out moving around having fun, getting stuff done, and enjoying the trip.
All right. But essentially, you're not like a weekend warrior, as it were, someone that rides just pretty much weekend centuries and stuff like that. It's part of your lifestyle.
It's part of my life, yeah. Great. And it's really it's integrated into my life so far that I don't really think about it being a separate thing. You know, when I go out to do something, I get on my bike for some or part of that trip, and you know, it's not the bicycle part of it is not segregated or apart from anything. I just get on the bike and go.
Great.
So that's why I'd say maybe, you know, an integrated bicyclist might be a way to put it.
Excellent. Okay, well, I guess that pretty much tells me that you're car-free. Is that correct?
Well, I'm almost car-free. I have to cop to the fact that my wife has a car, and I wouldn't be a total gentleman and a good husband if I didn't put up a little bit to the car and the insurance. But she uses it, and I pay for part of it. So that's my, you know, full disclosure on car ownership.
Okay.
I'm not 100% kosher.
Okay. Excellent. How often are you on a bike there in San Francisco?
Pretty much every day. Mm-hmm. This winter was pretty wet. We had a pretty rainy winter, and on those days when it's raining, I'm a fair weather friend, and I'll take the bus or I'll walk. So I'm biking a little bit less when the weather is not so beautiful. But it's been really nice, pretty clear weather for the last month and a half, and I don't think there's been a day when I wasn't riding someplace, either for work or for goofing off.
Great. Okay. Maybe I'll get to that a little later on in the interview, what that goofing off looks like, because I think there's a lot of it to be had in San Francisco. What kind of bike do you ride?
I've got a Gunner frame. The Gunner folks working out of the original Schwinn factory in Waterford, Wisconsin. And my understanding is this is kind of the affordable version of the fancy Waterford frame. And the bike is built up by the good folks here in San Francisco at American Cyclery. Little plug for them. The components are all kind of Frankenstein. They were the bits and pieces that were. They had the shifters from a couple of seasons ago, and the brakes are from somewhere. And so it's a nice kind of a mutt bike in the best sense. But it's a very much an upright, tall bike. It's practically a circus bike. It's small. and it's great. I always tell people it's good for outreach. As I'm rolling around the city, I'm up looking at or down into cars and even buses sometimes. So being up high is a cool thing. I get a lot of good conversations out of it.
Great. Okay. Now, when you say you're up high, are you tall yourself?
I am myself tall. I'm about 6'1".
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, whatever I'm riding, I tend to be up high.
Okay.
But the bike itself is built up pretty high. And, I don't even know. I'd have to get out a tape measure and tell you where my eyes are when I'm on the thing. But
okay.
I feel like I should have a bear on my shoulders and a ball on top of that.
Okay. Excellent. Now, how many bikes do you have?
I've got two. The
okay.
second bike is I've got an old Raleigh that I ride around. It's pretty beat, and that's really only out when this other one is in the shop or otherwise incapacitated. I feel a little less than totally authentic. There are folks that I know that got 4, 5, 6, 7 bikes, and so I really just have the one that I just ride to death,
mm-hmm.
And the other one is kind of the dinky. In case this one goes in the shop, I've got one to pedal around until I get
great.
The first one back.
And I guess you've got gears on your main. It's not a fixer. It's you got gears.
No,
on that bike.
It's your. Let's see. The rear cluster's got 6, so I guess it's an 18 wheeler. Is that so? 18 speed. Your convertible 3 in the front and 6 in the back.
Mm-hmm.
The fixie phenomenon very hot here in San Francisco, but I've not yet ridden one myself. I guess that would be the true trick bike at that point for me.
Okay.
But you do see them everywhere, and I'm kind of an older guy set in my ways, and I see the young people on the fixies, and I think those kids do it, but they're sure pretty.
Okay. Critical Mass has got has a lot of different interpretations in a lot of people's minds. Do you ride Critical Mass?
Yeah, I get out for about, every third Mass. It's the last Friday of the month,
mm-hmm.
and depending on what's going on, sometimes I'm just not in the right place
mm-hmm.
to join the Mass at the end of the month. But I'd say about every other month or every third month I meet up for the Mass, and it is as fun and silly and exciting and goofy as it's been ever. I think we're coming up on the 15th anniversary of Mass. Oh, maybe next year.
Mm-hmm.
2002 we had 10 years. So 2007 is going to be 15 years of Critical Mass here in San Francisco.
Great. All right.
So I'll definitely be out for that one. That'll be September next year.
Okay, I think probably something that should have been at the beginning of all this. How long have you been riding a bike in San Francisco?
I've been riding a bike, I moved to San Francisco from Boston almost 20 years ago, about, I think, 19 or 18 years. And I've been riding in the city pretty much since I got here from Boston. I really wasn't much of a cyclist in Boston, although I had been a great avid cyclist in high school in the suburban Boston. But I went off to school in New York City and came back and lived in the city of Boston and kind of got out of the habit, walked, took buses. But ever since I've been a San Franciscan, almost 20 years, I've been a cyclist in the city.
Hmm. Okay. And during that time, have you, when I say during that time, I mean in present-day San Francisco, you've seen quite a bit of change.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. I would say even, in the last 7, 8 years,
huge.
One of the big changes I've seen is the general respect the bicyclists get.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be when I was riding around, motorists treated me like a freak, treated me like an obstacle, lots of beeping, lots of pushy behavior.
Right.
And I would say, just on my own experience, that bicycling or bicyclists have become pretty routine and pretty normal for the general traffic scene. And so one thing that's getting better is that motorists in general seem to be politer, seem to be more respectful, and seem to accept the fact that a bicycle on the street belongs there, and it isn't just some recreational thing that is an obstacle. I've also seen just an increase in bicycles on the road, and I think those things probably go together. There are just more people biking in the city now than even a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
and as there are more me and my friends and other folks are riding, I think that builds the the normalness of bicycling in the city. So overall, I think bicycling has gotten more and more normal and routine in the time that I've been living here and bicycling here, and that's a good thing.
Now, would you attribute that to some of that to the politics of the city?
Yeah, I would say that it's a complicated mix of factors that have brought more bicyclists out, but obviously better physical facilities for bicycling in the city. That is, bike lanes and intersection treatments and just kind of street design, places for bicycles to ride. That has grown and grown, and we've got a pretty good network of bike routes that at the Bike Coalition we're always working to improve. And obviously that helps bring more people out on bikes, but underneath that is the political atmosphere, is the culture of San Francisco as a place that is green or thinks it's green, thinks it's sustainable, thinks that it's about having environmental friendliness to it. And I say thinks because, you know, San Francisco, we say these things. The reality is we're not quite as green or sustainable or progressive as we think. But we certainly have come a long way in building up the streets to be better for bicycles and pedestrians, and that sort of, you know, builds, that success builds on itself. And the more that there's a way to go on a bike that's got a lane, more people come out, and then there's more of a constituency politically, and so it's a virtuous circle, if you will.
Chicken and the egg.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Okay, Andy, you were there during the dark days, it sounds like, 19 years of cycling in the city. You were there during the dark days when Mayor Brown, who we'll probably have on the – Willie Brown, who's probably going to get on the show with us as well, when he kiboshed critical mass. What was it like during that period of time for you as a cyclist?
Well, it was definitely more of a – I wouldn't say an outlaw – period. I think, you know, I've never felt that I didn't have a legitimate place on the street, but it certainly was a time when you had to be ready to argue for your rights and you had to be ready to push back. And indeed, Mayor Brown characterized bicyclists as a bunch of weenies. I think that was his term. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And these folks don't vote. You know, I think maybe two of these bicycle people vote. You know, they're not really citizens and they're not really political players. And, you know, we really just did not have the general and the cultural acceptance and support for the idea of bicycling as a routine and normal thing. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it was a huge community even then of people riding bicycles in the city who came together not only at critical mass, which really got the mayor's attention, but, you know, every day there were bicyclists out moving around using the streets. And, you know, that we always had a community. We always had strength in numbers. And it was never like we were living in a cave someplace, you know, in the hills, getting ready to come right into town and head back. We, you know, we were there. And the Bike Coalition, for its part, was, you know, at the table talking to the mayor during that time. I wasn't as involved. I wasn't on the staff, certainly, then. I was a member around the edges of things. There was tension, but it was a kind of a tension. It was the sort of thing that, like, I don't want to dignify it too much, but, you know, Rosa Parks and the guys at the lunch counter at Walgreens, that kind of get-in-your-face moment that makes people a little uncomfortable, but it brings the question up to the top where everyone can say, yeah, what are we doing here? Shouldn't there be a place for bicycles? Aren't bicycles a real thing in the city? And for all of the kind of tension and pushing and awkwardness, it was a good thing because it brought the crisis to a boil. And very soon afterwards, the relationship with the police actually improved because they didn't want to have to wrestle with the bicycles. They wanted to have a way to make it work. Politically, not long afterwards, the election cycle in 2000 brought in a board of supervisors that's pretty progressive, pretty supportive of bicycling and alternative transit. And so that 1997 summer, when things really kind of hit the fan and really came to a boil, it was a good thing in a lot of ways. That's what we pushed off from. And I think even Willie would say now that, yeah, you know, bikes belong. They got a place.
He tells me he's a cyclist.
Seen him on a bicycle. It's
right.
True.
Right.
Not too often.
Uh-huh.
He used to come out for bike to work day.
Yeah.
And he looked fairly convincing on a bicycle. Wasn't totally natural.
Okay, so let's get back to biking in San Francisco. Boston has its extreme cold, and yet San Francisco has its legendary hills and fog and things like that.
Yeah.
Is it ever tough to ride a bike in San Francisco?
Well, indeed, the hills that you mentioned are a factor. A lot of times when I'm talking to someone who's not a regular bike rider in the city, they'll say, boy, how do you do it? There are hills everywhere. I don't know how you could get around. And the answer to that is that clever bicyclists learn how to go around the hills as much as possible. Sometimes you're going to your girlfriend's house and she lives on top of a hill and there's nothing for it. You just got to go up the hill. But a lot of times you can pull a maneuver that navigates you around the shoulder of the hill or between a couple of hills. And we have a very famous part of the bike route here in the city known as the Wiggle. The Wiggle is a set of streets coming off of Market Street at DuBose, near Dolores, north of Dolores Park and the Mission. And the Wiggle takes you on a seven-corner jog. You literally go right, left, right, left, right. And that sneaky, wiggly maneuver takes you kind of between a couple of hills, Buena Vista Park and the hill that Allen Square sits on top of. And that Wiggle is much used because it helps you avoid charging up a hill. But there are other Wiggles around town, and most folks, as they ride around, pretty quickly learn how to make a maneuver that seems to be a detour, seems to take you out of the way, but for heaven's sakes, it may be two extra minutes, but you know, you get there much calmer and happier. So wiggling is definitely one of the keys.
Okay.
Sometimes people want to do the hills. I've got friends who are hounds for hills. They love climbing. And I even have friends with fixies. And that seems like an impossible combination of fixed bike and steep hills. But there are people who go out of their way to ride up hills and come down them without any gear advantage and sometimes not even brakes. So it takes all kinds in a city like this.
Wow. Well, I guess to illustrate that point, if you get to our Mayor's Ride schedule at bikeroute.com, you'll see the video cast I have that we found for Frank Chan, who goes up a 31%. I guess that's the steepest hill you've
ever. Yeah. Yeah.
Right straight up it. And, of course, he's got I'm sure it's probably a titanium lightweight ultra quick machine, and he just powers straight up them, and yet.
But he's also a gung ho guy, and he makes sure to caffeinate adequately. You'll see that in the film as well.
Okay, that's
it's
right.
All about the coffee.
That's correct. Yes. Okay. How about the fog? How do you speak to the fog?
Well, you know, I live here because of the fog. When I came here from Boston, and the Boston winters are hard and cold, but the Boston summers are pretty heavy and tropical also. And I'm pretty sensitive to that warm, hot weather. I ended up being very much attracted to San Francisco because of the cool summers. So I even live on the west side of town, which is the foggiest part of the foggy city. Mm-hmm. And people will say, oh, again, like the hills. You know, I don't know. I couldn't do that living out in the fog. And I tell people, you know, I'd pay extra for the fog. That's good stuff. It's a very romantic thing. It's very, very poetic to take a ride through Golden Gate Park, the fog kind of clinging to the trees and misting along. And I'm also kind of a cheap detective fan. Love old Private Eye novels. And you really can't have private eyes without fog. And, you know, if you're going to ride around San Francisco, you got to have drifting fog and mysterious shapes. And so it's a big plus. The Presidio, also the former army base at the northern end of town, big piece of wild space, mostly wild. There's some houses and things, but great to go riding in the Presidio, and it's just at the Golden Gate. So you've got sea breezes pulling wet air in, and that brings fog, and nothing better than rolling around in the Presidio with that fog just drifting through and the foghorn sounding, and It's very mysterious and romantic,
okay.
So I love it.
Great. Well, you can go from cold and damp and foggy to sunny and warm and then overcast in the space of a few hours' time.
That's right. Because if you don't care for the fog, you can just pedal a couple of different directions, as you say, go over the bridge to Marin, or mm-hmm. even over to the east side of town into the Mission, and you probably
right.
find a little sun. So
right.
It's not hard to find the weather you like if you just roll around a little bit.
Okay. And if you're going to do like any across-town cycling, does that require that you carry extra clothes and socks and jackets and things like that with yourself?
Yeah, that's one of the secrets that locals tip you in on when you move here or you're visiting. You got to learn how to layer. You wear clothes that you can peel off and layer back on. So, you know, you start with a T-shirt and then maybe a sweatshirt and then maybe a windbreaker and something else, a sweater, big sweater. And, you know, the idea is that you can kind of ratchet up and ratchet down on your dress as you move around and in and out of climate. So, yeah, layering is the key concept for how to dress in the city.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And yet that layering requires that you've also got to carry things with you. I mean, cycle.
That's right.
Okay, so do you carry it on a rack or do you carry it on your back?
I've got a bike that's more of like a pickup truck in a lot of ways. I've got a big wire basket in the front, and I've got literally a wash bucket on the rack on the back.
Right on.
The bucket people. We are actually part of an oppressed minority here in the city, the bucket people, which is different from the milk crate people. But there's some affinity between those groups. But
okay.
I literally have what had been a red bucket. It's faded out. It's kind of pink, so it's even dopier looking now.
Okay.
And that's on the back. And the beauty part is the other kids point and laugh, but, you know, when I pull my sweater off, I just chuck it in my bucket. And, you know, I don't worry about strapping it onto something or tying it around my waist. And it's kind of the opposite of the fixie aesthetic, you know, the fixie idea that you strip down to the absolute minimum. My bike is about, you know, how much crap can I pile on and haul around. So that's part of the advantage to having those extra compartments.
Great.
I recommend that your listeners look into the bucket.
Okay. And is the bucket going to be had in the back of any restaurant or
you could swipe one perhaps. I think I paid $3 for mine at a hardware store.
Uh-huh.
So that's one way to go.
Okay.
But you might be able to score one if no one's looking.
Okay. Okay, now let's talk about all those tracks that you've got all over that city. The cable car tracks, the trolley tracks, things like that. Have you ever gone down yourself?
Yeah, I have. Unfortunately, more times than I'd like to remember, which is maybe a good point to make that, you know, even savvy regular cyclists are at risk of getting knocked down by tracks, partly because you get cocky, you get confident. If you're riding around all the time, you don't think about what you're doing, and, you know, you're looking at the pretty girl across the street, and all, boom, you're down on the pavement.
Right.
Those tracks will get you very easily if you're not paying attention. The geometry is one problem. If you ride, you know, in the same direction of the track, it's easy to get your wheel in the track and then get thrown off. Also, with that fog and sometimes rain, those tracks get slick. And, you know, the wet metal is very slippery and conducive to falling down. And between those two factors, I have, probably 4 or 5 times in as many years, you know, had either a near miss or actually went down. Happily, I've never been, you know, seriously injured. Mostly it's just my pride.
Right.
And I'll get back up and look around to see who saw that. You know.
Right.
Yeah, kind of like, oh dear, you know, I'm a pro, but I went down on the tracks.
Yeah,
but I've heard of
yeah.
people having, yeah, people do have worse accidents. And if you're moving pretty quickly, you know, at a speed and you the tracks the wrong way, you could have a bad spill. So it is a factor. And, you know, my advice, and I try to listen to it myself, is, you know, come at the tracks at an angle. The more of a right angle you make when you cross them, the less likely you're going to go down. And, you know, as you ride in the city, you do encounter them, and it's a challenge. So everybody look out for the tracks and try to make a right turn when you go across them.
And they're almost everywhere in San Francisco. I don't think
Market Street, the main drag of the city, certainly the main bicycling street in the city that runs from the ferry building at the bay all the way up to Twin Peaks in the middle of the city, has for most of its length trolley tracks and the streets that come off of that. Church Street has trolley tracks and some of the streets going out to the sunset. So cable car and trolley elsewhere in the city in the industrial section in the southeast along Illinois Street where we're trying to get some bike lanes. There are train tracks left over from the cargo uses in the Presidio and along the Marina Green. There are some tracks. So you're right.
All along the Embarcadero. All throughout Fisherman's Wharf. Yeah. Everywhere. Yeah. You know, everywhere cyclists want to go, there's tracks.
It's true. And some of that's because, you know, those routes are well suited to trolleys and trains. They've got, you know, nice flat grades, and they go between the hills, you know, various topographic advantages, and those tend to be streets that would be good to bike on as well. So, you know, that is kind of a factor. And again, I don't probably notice it as much as somebody who's just visiting from out of town would say, wow, look, there are tracks everywhere. So when you come to San Francisco, pay attention and mind the tracks.
How about doors, car doors?
Yeah, car doors, number one most popular way to get injured on a bike in the city, sadly, the most common kind of injury, because, you know, you're riding along beside parked cars and the driver's side, or the driver opens the door and pow, there's a door in your way. I had a friend just got cracked up over the weekend out in the Haight District. The advice on that is ride away from the cars. It's safer to ride out in the lane, take the lane, than it is to get up and hug the car doors. Mm-hmm. It's not intuitive, especially for folks who aren't used to riding in the city. Newbies feel it's safer to be right up against the car. They're not comfortable going into the lane where the other traffic is, but the fact is you're a lot safer out with the other vehicles in the lane. Now, we've got an innovation here in San Francisco that is intended to help that. The shared lane marking, or Sharo. This is a stencil that the local street department puts down on the pavement. It looks like the usual bike lane symbol, the one that we got from Denver, kind of an outline of someone on a bicycle. But above it, at the top of that, are a pair of chevrons, little arrows. They make kind of an arrow at the top of the stencil. And the idea is that you put these markings actually on the street every couple of hundred feet or even more frequently, like little footprints going up the street. And they are meant to tell everybody this is a shared space. Bikes and cars, get along. This is a shared space. Nobody gets to dominate anybody else. But they also are sitting right along the line of travel that's best for bicyclists. As you're riding along on a street that has these shared lane markings, if you on your bike ride directly over them, you'll be all lined up to be out of the door zone. You'll be out away from the door zone, or at least that's the intention, and for the most part that's so. So when you're riding around San Francisco, be looking for those sharrows and really just do a dot-to-dot. Ride over them and keep connecting the dots, and that will help keep you where you should be, away from that deadly door zone.
Okay. Do the sharrows, are they only within the context of a bike lane?
The idea is we prefer bike lanes where the street has the space and all the other factors are favorable. And there's always a political dimension, too. It's not instantly obvious to everybody that a certain street really should have a bike lane on it. But most cases where the street is too narrow, or also if it's a street that doesn't really have that much traffic, it may not really need a full bike lane. Mm-hmm. This is something that lets you tell everybody that this is a bike route, that this is a bike or a street. Expect to see bikes riding on this street. There isn't actually a segregated space that you get with a bike lane. So seeing these sharrows now on Market Street itself, the main street, this downtown busy street, there isn't really room as it exists now with the very wide sidewalks. There's not really room to chop out 5 or 6 feet for a bike lane. And still, we have a huge amount of bike traffic on Market Street. So rather than just throw up our hands and say, well, we can't really paint anything on the pavement, instead, we're able to have these shared lane sharrow markings, and they're about every 150 feet for the downtown part of Market Street, where there aren't lanes. Some of Market Street does have lanes. Okay, what these do is that they let us have some kind of a declaration that this is a bikeway, and that motorists see them, and the bicyclists see them, and everyone says, oh, that's right. There should have been a bike lane, but we can't fit it in. Instead, we'll have this this indication. So
great.
They work pretty well. I have to say that it sounds pretty soft. What good does that do?
Yeah.
But I find as I ride over them, it really helps to make everyone clear that this is a shared space for bikes and motor vehicles. So
excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Andy, also, I'm going to digress for a moment. What about kids? What about the future of cycling? Do you see many kids, young school-age children, riding their bikes in San Francisco?
Yeah, I do. That's something that I am seeing more and more. And again, remember, I've got kind of a prejudiced eye. I'm looking for them, but you know, even at that, I am seeing more kids out. I'm seeing more families out. In fact, this month's issue of the Tube Times, the Bike Coalition's newsletter, is all about families and bikes. And I urge folks to surf over to the Bike Coalition website. You can grab a PDF of the newsletter.
Do you want to go ahead? Cool. Do you want to give that site?
Sure. Surf on over to sfbike.org, sfbike.org. And if you look there, you'll be able to grab the Tube Times. And again, we've got lots of articles that we've actually just put on the website from this about the ways that you can go out with the family, with your kids, because that's another concern that I hear from people, that they say, oh, you know, I used to ride a bike all over the place and then had a baby. And, you know, now I've got two kids and I don't bike anymore. And I say, well, you know, why not? There's no reason why you can't still get out with your kids. And in fact, there are lots of ways to do it. So, you know, I'm seeing kids biking, but I'm also seeing more, you know, parents with kids. I see a lot of mothers and fathers in the morning and in the evening with their kids, dropping their kids off at daycare or taking them to school, and the kids will be on one of those, you know, tag-along half bikes, or even their own bike. And that's very heartwarming. Because in the city, a lot of the unnecessary car trips that are happening in the morning and in the evening are parents driving their children to school. And I don't know if it's still true, but recently the number one fatality cause for kids in the city was not drugs, not gang violence, but auto accidents. And I always tell parents, you know, if you really care for your kids and you want to be safe in the city, get rid of your car. Your kid is more likely to die under the wheels of your neighbor's car, you know, being dropped off at school, than they are in some kind of a shootout with gangs. So I love to see families get kids to school on bikes, and I am honestly seeing more and more of that. So it's a very heartwarming thing. And, of course, those kids grow up thinking that this is not a weird thing. This is a normal thing, and bicycles aren't something you stop doing when you get out of grade school. But a bike can be part of your life for your whole life, and that's a really good lesson to get kids on.
Great. Okay, when these kids grow up and they get to be Andy's age, and you know, like in their 20s and 30s and such, do cyclists in the city have is there a hangout? Is there a pub, a shop, a place where people go and just chew the proverbial fat bicycle?
Oh yeah, thing? Yeah. There are lots of good nooks and crannies and corners and. The number one celebrated big bar is, of course, Zeitgeist on Valencia Street at about Dubos. It's a biker bar in all senses. Motorcycle aficionados often stop in there, but so do folks who ride bicycles. And on any given afternoon in the summer or the evening, you'll find lots and lots of folks getting together in the backyard at Zeitgeist. Very pleasant spot, and it's a great place to crash and hang out. Another great place that many critical masses end up in other unofficial rides is the Wave Organ out at the marina at the end of the breakwater near Fort Mason and the Exploratorium. A very interesting kind of an art project that the Exploratorium sponsored about 25 or 30 years ago, and you're actually sitting out on the edge of the bay. Great place to ride, great place to bring a little picnic or a little bag of something and just crash and hang with your friends after a nice ride out of the Wave Organ. So a couple of tips for listeners. You can be an instant local if you show up at Zeitgeist.
Okay. And Valencia Street, that's you've had some victories there. Valencia Street is – do you want to talk about those for just a couple seconds?
Yeah, Valencia Street is had been at one time a real heavy car traffic arterial street. It's a north-south road street that goes kind of along the edge of the Mission District. And had been carrying a certain amount of bicycle traffic, but no real space for bikes. I think three lanes in each direction, no, two lanes in each direction, and very busy street. And probably at this point, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, Bike Coalition started a campaign to civilize Valencia Street. Let's get some bike lanes on Valencia. And not only that, let's reconfigure the lanes so that it works better for motorists. And it was a real fight. What has become a common concept of traffic calming and road diet, where you take away some of the car space and give it back, at that time, that wasn't in people's minds. It wasn't part of the conversation. And Valencia Street had a lot of resistance. The merchants in their shops along Valencia thought that this was going to kill business if we take space away from cars and we give it to bikes. But we managed to prevail, and there have been bike lanes on Valencia now for many years, and it's widely regarded, even by the merchants, as a great success, because it means that that street is so much more pleasant to walk along and shop and do various kinds of business. So it has become the poster child for how to take a traffic sewer of a street and turn it into something that's a little more complete for everybody. Even the disbelievers now say, yeah, we could do that just like we did with Valencia Street. It's a real success.
Fantastic. Well, in wrapping up, this has been fantastic stuff. It really has, Andy. What do you think about a network of safely bikeable roads that connect to Boston called the National Bicycle Greenway?
Man, that sounds fantastic. I would love to be able to tell people to just head east, and there's a safe, plausible way to go the whole way on your bicycle. That sounds like it should be a top priority for the nation as we start running out of petroleum, as we build up the suburbs and the sprawl gets worse. We really need to be able to give people some sort of a plausible way to go on their own power, and that sure would be a great thing.
Okay, well, I guess as in the form of education for those that are new to this concept, the Lincoln Highway, 1914, was the first coast-to-coast car road, and that connected New York City with San Francisco. It ended at just outside of Golden Gate Park.
Sure, at the Lincoln Park.
Right,
that's
exactly.
That's why Lincoln Park is Lincoln Park, yeah.
Correct, yes. Now, that is the idea behind the National Bicycle Greenway. Instead of over the years, we've been kind of looking at maybe having a smorgasbord network up and down the coasts, crisscross the nation, network of bike roads. But it seems like the reason that car roads have had the success they've had is because the Lincoln Highway was able to connect those two cities and has spawned road growth all over America. That's what we look to do with the National Bicycle Greenway. Follow that success they had in 1914 of connecting Boston with San Francisco, and just watching the watching the bike roads just start to kind of take off from there.
I would pivot off that. Two things that come to mind: that back in that point in history, the bicyclists really had already done a lot of the work in lobbying for better paved roads. 100 years ago, before there really were automobiles, bicyclists as hobbyists and passionate hobbyists demanded more and more better facilities for bicycling. And some of the first paved streets in the country came because of bicyclists asking for them. And, of course, the bicycle mutated into autos and went crazy from there. But there's a precedent for bicyclists asking for better facilities. The interstate highway system that sort of followed World War II, which is about to have its 50th birthday, was born out of anxiety about national security and the mm-hmm. idea of being able to move the troops around and get weapons around. And I think an argument could be made for a transcontinental bikeway that had the same kind of national security imperative.
Right, right.
It's not for goofing off. This is for our national security.
Right.
And I think that's a very plausible and productive argument to make, that it's not for fun. It's a serious thing. This nation needs to be able to move around on its own power. We saw after Hurricane Katrina how important it is for a city and a region to be able to get around without automobiles. Mm-hmm. So I think the interstate system could be an ironic model for this kind of project.
Well, it's funny, and you should say that Eisenhower saw the need for that in 1956 when he birthed the interstate highway system. He also, I don't know if you know this or not, but he was part of the original 1921 brigade that went across on the Lincoln Highway.
I think I heard that, yeah.
Yeah, and so he saw the need for something like this. We've also reached a point where we've fouled our nest. We need something like the National Bicycle Greenway to reverse some of this craziness of the overweight America, the ozone depletion, the things we've done with this unabated car sprawl that's choking us to death.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so wouldn't it be really fantastic and outrageously great if we connected to your old city with a bike road?
Absolutely. We've still got along California Street out at my end of town. There's still at least one and maybe two of the original Lincoln Highway markers along the street.
Oh, great.
So
really?
we're ready from this end to start growing it back out the other way.
All right. Fantastic. Yeah. Excellent. Well, Andy, I guess that's pretty much about all we have time for right now. I'd love to talk with you forever. You're a wonderfully articulate and well-spoken representative ambassador for your San Francisco Bike Coalition. I'm excited you're there, and I have a good feeling for why San Francisco cycling is just rocking so hard.
Well, thanks, Barton. It's my pleasure. I'd be doing it no matter what, but I'm always glad to talk about it.
All right. Okay, guy. Well, again, thanks, man. This has been fabulous. It really has. Can't wait to share it with our listeners.
Great. Thanks, Martin. It was a pleasure.
Okay, guy. Thanks for you, Andy.
All righty.
See you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.
That wraps up another edition of the National Bicycle Greenways Mountain Movers podcast series. We hope you enjoyed it. This has been NBG director and Awake Again author Martin Krieg. For more info about the NBG, go to nationalbicyclegreenway.com. To access this podcast in the future and to hear other shakers and movers that we've interviewed, go to bikeroute.com.